stars go blue.
Dancing where the evening.
Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Rock Review. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about rock and roll music from such sources as The News and Observer, The Week magazine, The Independent, New York Times, ClassicRock.about.com, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. This opening number, When the Stars Go Blue, is performed by The Corrs, along with Bono.
When the stars go blue, when the stars go blue.
We'll be hearing more about this Irish group, The Corrs, later on in today's program, and they'll close out today's program as well. But first, these trivia questions. Our trivia questions come to us once again from www.triviaplane.com. First question, what was the first number one single for Hall & Oates? What was the name of that song? Second question, which female vocalist was a member of the Eurythmics? Big hint coming up. This is that singer's latest album, the song called Bitter Pill. She was with the Eurythmics. What's her name? The transition section of today's program comes to us once again from BGORecords.com. Today in rock history. And today is the weekend of July 30th through August the 1st. What were the number one hits this weekend in the past? Well, back in 1964 this weekend, you may remember it was the Beatles with A Hard Day's Night. And 2 years later, back in 66 this weekend, it was the Troggs' Wild Thing. Back in 1971, it was James Taylor, You've Got a Friend. And back in 1974 this weekend, it was the Wings' Band on the Run. Back in 1981, Rick Springfield, Jesse's Girl. And back in 1987 this weekend, it was Los Lobos, La Bamba. If you were born on the 30th of July, you share a birthday with Edward Cookie Burns of 77 Sunset Strip fame. He was born on the 30th of July, 1938. And if you were also born on the 31st of July, you share a birthday with Paul Anka, Diana. He was born on that day in 1941. Also Bob Welch, Ebony Eyes, 1946. Gary Lewis of Gary Lewis and the Playboys, 1946, July 31. Hugh McDowell of ELO, 1953 on July 31. And Bill Berry of REM, born on July 31, 1958. On August 1, if you were born on that day, you share a birthday with Jerry Garcia of Grateful Dead. He was born on that day in 1942. And Dennis Payton of Dave Clark 5. He was born on August 1, 1943. Tim Bachman of Bachman Turner Overdrive, born in 1951 on August 1. Coolio, born in 1963 on August 1. And finally, you share a birthday with Adam Duritz of Counting Crows. He was born on August 1, 1964. On August 1, Johnny Burnett, Dreaming, died. He died in 1964 on August 1. In miscellany and rock history this weekend, well, 50 years ago this weekend, it was Chubby Checker sparking a new worldwide dance craze as The Twist hits the American chart. And it was 47 years ago this weekend that the Beach Boys debuted on the charts with Surfing USA. And back 39 years ago this weekend, the concert for Bangladesh, featuring George Harrison, Eric Clapton, Ringo Starr, Billy Preston, and Bob Dylan was held at Madison Square Garden. It was back in 1975 this weekend that Miami Show Band, an Irish pop group, are ambushed and murdered by Protestant gunmen. A year later, in 1976, Blue Oyster Cult release Don't Fear the Reaper in the UK. 30 years ago today, John Phillips of Mamas and Papas is arrested on drug charges. And in 1982 this weekend, Alan Parsons' project hits U.S. Top 40 with Eye in the Sky. Back in 1986 this weekend, Boy George is fined £250 in London for heroin possession. And 21 years ago this weekend, it was Eric Clapton playing a free charity concert in Mozambique, Africa for more than 100,000 people. Finally, back in 1992 this weekend, many Motown stars gather for a memorial service for Mary Wells, who died of cancer at the age of 49. Smokey Robinson sang a medley of Wells' hits. Makes you feel old when you realize just how long ago some of those events were. This next article is brought to us by Variety.com, published on May 28, 2010, entitled Concert Biz Feels YouTube Pain. This is written by Steve Chagolan. The decision to postpone U2's U.S. concerts until next year because of Bono's back surgery not only has affected the bottom line for concert promoter Live Nation and the organizers of the Glastonbury Festival, where U2 was scheduled to headline in late June, but could make a significant dent in the 2010 concert business overall. When you have an act like U2 touring, it greatly inflates the year's revenues, said Gary Bongiovanni, editor-in-chief of Polestar. The Irish rockers, whose shows have become huge in scale, were the top draw in the U.S. last year, accruing $123 million in gross receipts, according to Polestar. They were the only act to top the $100 million mark. Springsteen finished at number two with $94.5 million, despite playing only 20 dates. The article skips down. The long-running 360 tour, which began in June 2009 with a reported per-city overhead of $750,000 and advanced ticket sales of $1 million in North America for the latest leg, was supposed to land in Anaheim on June 6 and 7. But with Bono's recovery expected to take at least 8 weeks, the band will skip the 16 stateside shows scheduled to culminate New Jersey's Meadowlands Stadium on July 19. The band will immediately segue into its European trek, beginning August 6 in Turin, Italy, once Bono is mobile. This is probably the most rest we'll have had in decades, noted The Edge on U2's website. In a strange way, the layoff could benefit a band that had already blown through the country late last year, armed with new material, the 2009 LP, No Line on the Horizon, that might not seem as fresh this time around. It may work to the band's advantage to put a little distance between the dates, Bongiovanni said. Also, The Edge had indicated on U2.com that the band was looking forward to introducing some songs from its planned Songs of Ascent collection when it's back up and running. The ultimate proving ground for a tune, he said, is to play it live.
Now I got a head like a lit cigarette, unholy clouds reflecting a minaret. You're so high above me, higher than everyone. Where are you in the cedars of Lebanon?
In local rock news, we see this article by David Menconi, published in NewsObserver.com on 13 July 2010, entitled Ringo Brings Star Power. From his center stage position, Ringo Starr looked out at the assembled throng and smiled. Here's a song I used to do with that other band I used to be with, he said with a smile. The crowd roared in anticipation. "Yes," he said, "Rory Storm in the Hurricanes." And Starr went right ahead and performed Boys, which he sang with the Liverpool Skiffle Group before he joined that other band that went on to become a lot better known. Funny thing, I don't believe Starr ever uttered the word Beatles on stage Saturday night, even though his time in the group was the reason he drew a packed house to the Durham Performing Arts Center. And while he did mention his two late Beatle bandmates, George Harrison and John Lennon, the very much alive Paul McCartney's name never came up. Some of the best-known signatures went missing, too, including Octopus's Garden, Year 16, Oh My My, and the No-No Song. Nevertheless, it was a fun 2 hours. Starr has been touring with an all-star band since the late 1980s, and this latest edition was mighty fine, with Rick Derringer, Edgar Winner, and Gary Wright, who all got multiple turns in the spotlight. It felt like tuning into a really good AM Top 40 station, circa 1975. Starr came bouncing on stage to the strains of It Don't Come Easy, looking very spry and agile despite having turned 70 4 days earlier. And though he established very clearly that this wasn't going to be the Beatles show, he projected an endearing amiability as he smiled broadly, flashed peace signs, and led the applause with his drumsticks. After 3 songs from Starr to open the show, it was time for his sidemen Starr turns. It was the perfect format for this class of rock star, in which each did his 2 big hits as Starr provided quips, rim shots, and backbeats. Derringer offered up Hang On Sloopy and Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo, the latter with an extended guitar solo that had jaws dropping. Winter still sounded fantastic on Free Ride, and Wright's Dreamweaver was as spacey and weird as ever. The band had a couple of 80s ringers, too, Richard Page from Mr. Mister and Wally Palmer from The Romantics, who both did exactly the songs you'd expect, Talking in Your Sleep, What I Like About You, Curia, and Broken Wings. Still, Starr was the main event. I could have done with fewer new songs, including 2 from his year's Why Not album, especially because the warmth in the room increased 1,000-fold whenever he did one of those Beatles oldies. He prefaced one of them by saying that it hadn't gotten a great response the night before, so he was thinking of dropping it from the set unless it went over better in Durham. The song in question was With a Little Help from My Friends. Fear not, it isn't going anywhere. Then there was Yellow Submarine. Starr didn't identify it by name, but he said he expected everyone to sing along and that anybody who didn't know it was at the wrong venue. No worries, everyone knew every word, and it was the most raucous sing-along of the evening. Afterward, the crowd broke into an impromptu Happy Birthday. As the crowd applauded, Starr smiled again. I searched, he said, but I did not find your gift.
Time waits for nobody, and nobody waits for time. Life is for the living, all we have to do is shine.
This next article is brought to us by John Jurgensen in the Wall Street Journal, published on the 9th of July, 2010, entitled, The End of the Road? The concert business, a lone bright star in the struggling music industry, is in trouble this summer. A tale of bad backs, canceled acts, and angry fans. The concert business is supposed to be the music industry's one sure thing, but not this summer. The Eagles, Rihanna, and Maxwell have canceled tour dates. A wobbling American Idol tour has flooded the market with discounted tickets, and the resurrected Lilith Fair tour has called off concerts from Dallas to Salt Lake City. Even teen idols, the Jonas Brothers, announced last week that they're scrapping some of the shows. Then there's this summer's disabled list among rock's contingent of aging stars. Bono's out after back surgery, scuttling a U2 megatour. Art Garfunkel, who was supposed to be reuniting with Paul Simon, is nursing a vocal cord condition. With the continued evaporation of recorded music sale, acts at all levels of the talent pool must lean heavily on their live performance earnings. That's forcing artists to tour more and to keep their ticket prices high despite the weak economy. This has created a glut of seats. Ticket prices also can vary tremendously for the same concert. Concertgoers are beginning to shop less like obsessed rock fans and more like picky air travelers, waiting weeks to buy tickets in hopes of scoring discounts, scouting a maze of websites and resellers for the best prices. The emphasis on touring revenue is tempting more artists to test one of the industry's unwritten rules: only hit the road when there's a new album to promote.
In the dark of the night, I can hear you calling my name. With the heart of the hearts, I still feel full of pain.
Kings of Leon, composed of three Southern brothers and their first cousin, broke out in the U.S. with its 2008 album, Only by the Night. The group hit the road then and continued to tour through most of 2009, then launched another tour last month, which will take the band to some U.S. regions it has already visited twice since the release of the album. In one of the big outdoor amphitheaters the band is scheduled to play in August, only about one-third of the available tickets have been sold so far. The group had sold out a slightly smaller amphitheater in the same market less than a year ago. The article skips down. What's working this summer? Well, James Taylor and Carole King are filling arenas with fervent boomers all over the country. Each has a 40-year-old body of work, and combining the two icons ignited special buzz. Similarly, some festivals do fine because they're offering dozens of bands. Sales are strong out of the gate for mellow rocker Jack Johnson, who is launching a tour Friday after a 2-year break. Young star Justin Bieber is packing in the tweens. Article skips down. Live Nation Entertainment, which after a recent merger with Ticketmaster is now the most powerful live music company in the industry, says bad news from a handful of tours doesn't signal a crisis. Cancellations are part of the business, and in fact the numbers this year is in line with past years, says Jason Garner, chief executive of the company's concerts division. Still, he says, failed tours and slower ticket sales should serve as a collective wake-up call. When 40% of tickets across the industry are going unsold, you have to have an honest talk about ticket prices. The article skips down. The likes of Taylor Swift and Mr. Bieber are immune from this problem for now. It's something the parents won't say no to. They're more likely to buy a concert ticket for their kids than they are for themselves, says Chris Wright, vice president of sports and entertainment for SMG, which manages arenas. Packaging different acts together isn't always working. The Eagles, one of history's most successful rock bands who grossed $42 million touring last year, sought to expand its audience this summer by tapping into country music, recruiting Keith Urban and the Dixie Chicks to open 8 stadium shows. But the bill didn't entice country fans en masse, and Eagles fans had already had many opportunities to see the band, which has been touring to promote its most recent album, Long Road Out of Eden, since its release in 2007. Article skips down. The industry is trying to rationalize all this by saying it's the same as being on an airplane, where you don't know what the person next to you paid, says Alex Hodges, an independent promoter who runs Los Angeles area venues. Today's music fans vigilantly monitor discussions online so they know if others are getting a better deal. Live Nation agreed to pay rocker Tom Petty up to $700,000 per concert for his current tour with the Heartbreakers, according to people familiar with the situation. That contributed to the highest ticket prices that Mr. Petty has commanded in his 40-year career. They range from about $35 for lawn tickets to $125 for closer seats and up to $300 each for the Mojo package, which included VIP parking and a download of Mr. Petty's album, Mojo. Some fans of Mr. Petty, a working man's rocker, express bitterness about the prices online. One fan complained online, "I was fortunate enough to see Petty front row 2001 and fourth row 2002. Price for the tickets were around only $60 at that time." The article skips down. Part of the problem seems to be that a lot of the music folks have today isn't even paid for. When 18-year-old Gordy Murphy, for example, wants to sample new music, he typically grabs it for free at a free music site. "It may be illegal, I don't know," he says. He immediately knows the 5,000 songs on his computer, but he rarely visits the sites of current artists in his collection, and thus rarely knows when they're releasing new music or embarking on a tour. "There's no way to keep on top of all that," he says. But Mr. Murphy still has his loyalties. This summer, he plans to see singer-songwriter John Mayer, his longtime musical hero, for the third time. His tastes also run to Jimi Hendrix and Stevie Ray Vaughan. "In that way," he says, "I consider myself an old person."
Anger, he smiles, tavern in, shining metallic purple armor. Queen jealousy, envy waits behind it. Her fiery green gown sneers at the grassy ground. Blue eyes and life-giving waters taken for granted. They quietly understand the once happy turquoise on his layout was still ready.
So what do you know about this featured group today, The Coors? Well, this biography comes to us from John Bush and Andrew Leahy of the All Music Guide, downloaded from VH1.com on the 12th of July, 2010. A photogenic family band comprising three sisters and one brother, The Coors, vocalist Andrea, drummer Caroline, violinist Sharon, and guitarist keyboard player Jim, blend the music of their Irish background with contemporary pop rock elements. The quartet formed in 1991 and enjoyed regional popularity in Ireland until 1994, when the American ambassador to the country invited the Coors to perform at the 1994 World Cup in Boston. The Coors subsequently expanded their popularity by appearing at the Olympic Games in Atlanta and earning a support slot on Celine Dion's 1996 tour, two gigs that helped pave the way for their well-received debut album. The Coors' first studio album, Forgiven, Not Forgotten, became internationally popular, but nowhere more so than their homeland, where the LP's four times platinum status made it one of the most popular debuts by an Irish group.
Dream you were the movie star with popcorn in your hands. I did. Do you ever feel someone else?
Talk on Corners followed in 1997 and was reissued in expanded form early the following year. The album was instrumental in launching the band's star status in the UK, where it spawned four top ten singles and became the best-selling record of 1998. Talk on Corners eventually sold over 2.9 million copies, making it one of the most successful albums in British history. In 1999, to add to the group's recognition, the Coors toured with the Rolling Stones and appeared on Saturday Night Live, The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, and other high-profile programs. Meanwhile, singer Andrea Corr returned to acting with a role in Evita. The group reconvened shortly thereafter to record In Blue, their third studio album. Boasting a slickly polished sound that was more indebted to pop music than the band's Celtic heritage, In Blue launched the Coors' first American hit with Breathless, which also became their first and only chart-topping single in the UK.
Say it's true, there's nothing like me and you. I'm not alone. Tell me you feel it too.
1 year after its release, the band released a concert recording entitled VH1 Presents the Corrs Live in Dublin, which saw them collaborating with the likes of Bono and Ronnie Wood.
She would never say where she came from. Yesterday don't matter if it's gone. While the sun is bright or in the darkest night, no one knows. She comes and goes. Goodbye, Ruby Tuesday.
A short hiatus followed as Carolyn had a baby. A new version of the Oscar-nominated Time Enough for Tears appeared on the Corrs' next album, Borrowed Heaven, which marked a return to their folksy roots in 2004. Issued 1 year later, Home brought the musicians even closer to their origins, as it took the bulk of its set list from old Irish standards. Although popular in the Corrs' homeland, Home's traditional sound did not fare well in other countries. All the Way Home, A History of the Corrs, one of the many compilation albums in the band's catalog, followed in 2006. This final article is an album review of Herbie Hancock's The Imagine Project by Mikhail Wood, who gives it a B+, says, download this, Slow Burning, Don't Give Up. This appeared in Entertainment Weekly the 25th of June, 2010. The jazz piano giant hooks up with an international cast of guest stars, including Pink and Juanes, for covers of such Up With People anthems as Imagine, and A Change Is Gonna Come. Sometimes the lush arrangements go hotel bar bland. Mostly Hancock hits the spot. He takes on Bob Marley's Exodus, featuring Kanan and Los Lobos, is a truly global trip. The Imagine Project.
Imagine there's no heaven.
So how'd you do on those trivia questions? What was the first number one single for Hall & Oates? That was Rich Girl. And which female vocalist was a member of the Eurythmics? That was Annie Lennox. So we end up today's program with the Corrs' Only When I Sleep, a combination of traditional Irish instruments and pop and rock.
You're only just a dream boat sailing in my head. You swim my secret ocean.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. The program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until next time.
Just a sea mist surrounding.